Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I am your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Ed Finch. Ed Finch is the co-founder and exponential coach and vice president of Hundo. He is the founder of the Finch Model. The Finch Model tackles subjects that are causing confusion and represents in easy-to-understand formats. Ed and his team specialize in helping their clients become fully aligned with their business, which has multiple benefits beyond just personal. Their coaching, courses, and other delivery methods cut through the seemingly complex subjects to achieve easy solutions. This is the core of their work, solutions that are easy to implement and address multiple issues. Ed and his team truly deliver order out of confusion. And with that, Ed, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is a pleasure having you here today.
Thank you, Dave. It's a real pleasure for me too, and here to help your listeners any way I can.
Excellent. And I know we have a lot to cover, but before we do that, I know our listeners are probably going to be curious about where you're from initially. You have a beautiful accent. And so tell us a little bit about where you're from and where you're living now.
Okay. I'm from England. I'm originally from London. I lived in Yorkshire in England and also in Somerset. So that's probably why my accent's a little bit mixed. And about 5 years ago, I moved to France to the Dordogne. So I'm living in a beautiful part of France now. Lovely life.
So let's get right down to it. Please tell our listeners about the experience or experiences that have shaped your life path.
Yeah, since we were discussing in the pre-podcast interview, there's been many things in my life that have brought me to where I am now. And trying to pick one moment is very difficult because you accumulate so many things in your life. And if I was charged with picking one moment in my life, I would say it was about November last year. As part of my work with Finch Model, I put an advert out to help people who needed support with their businesses. And I offered a session to help coach them on any problem they had. This one chap came to me and asked for a conversation. He told me afterwards he wasn't expecting much out of it and wasn't expecting to get a lot. But he came to me and he said, I've got a fantastic website and a fantastic service. I hadn't seen his website at that time. And his service was to help veterans, US veterans, get the benefits that they're entitled to. And he said his problem is he's got this lovely website and he's just not getting engagements. People are being charged colossal amounts of money to get their benefits entitlement. And he was doing it incredibly low cost because he's a disabled veteran himself. But he just wasn't getting engagement. So we talked it through and I gave him my best insights as to what I thought the problems were, and he went away very happy. And then after that, I had a look at his website, and I contacted him again and gave him some more feedback based on what I'd seen of his website. And as a result, he came back to me and said, can I be your client? Lovely. And we got talking, and unfortunately, because his business wasn't making any money, he couldn't really afford to engage me as a coach, but I loved his vision for what he wanted to do. I loved his passion for it, and I could instantly see opportunities to do so much more. So because of that, and because we just seemed to connect in terms of values and everything else, we got talking about working together. And at that point, we decided to go into a joint venture partnership. And subsequently, he made me vice president of Hondo, which is the organization for US veterans. And we've taken the whole thing to exponential levels, to be perfectly honest. It's every day it's evolving into new areas, and it's gone stratospheric. We're just on the beta launch at the moment. But for me, that was a big turning point. I've been able to implement my knowledge, my skills and expertise, put everything into one place with, and we've brought on board members. We've got well over 100 members already just without opening the doors properly. And meeting amazing people and be able to do some amazing work. So that's the biggest turning point, I think, for my life, is meeting Christopher Raymond Castro, the veteran, and connecting on a deep level and seeing something that was going to make a huge change to society, and launching that and being able to explore that as far as we can take it.
It sounds like everything just kind of happened. I don't use coincidence in my vocabulary anymore, but it was just like the universe aligned with, yeah. It brought you two together, and it was almost like your paths were destined to cross at that point, because the two of you together were supposed to really do impactful things.
Yes. Yeah. There was a moment not that long after we met when he said something that, I would say, melted my heart rather than broke it. And it was just, for him, it was straightforward, and it was just something ordinary to say. But to me, it was one of the most profound things anybody could say. He said that his father had passed away some years ago, and he used to sit and chew ideas over with his father and explore possibilities and things that he might be able to do, and just really have some deep, deep, deep time together. And he said he really misses that. And he said he was getting that, all of that, with me. So he saw me as a replacement for his father. And I thought that was huge. That was a huge moment. So we knew that we were connecting on a deep level, and we knew that we had achieved great things. It's obviously was just meant to be.
Yeah, if I had a nickel for every time a person came into my life, Ed, when they were meant to come into my life, I'd be a very rich man right now.
Yeah.
And the people that have crossed my path, particularly in the last 21 years of my life, has not been by chance. It's all been part of the grand design.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've had that many times over. It never ceases to get to me when I think of all the people that I've helped and the ways I've helped them and transformed their lives. And that's what I want as a legacy. I want to change lives for the better. I want to help as many people as possible. And yeah, it's very special when that happens. Very special.
Yeah, it is. And I think I share that same vision. After I've left this life, I want to have left it helping as many people as possible. And those people who needed my help or wanted my help. And that's, you know, because not everybody wants our help. And, everybody has free will. They can take whatever suggestions anybody makes and do with it what they want. But I want to be able to be remembered as somebody who tried to make a difference in helping as many people as I could, much like you. So I know you talked about the Finch model. Tell our listeners a little bit more about the Finch model. What are the components of the Finch model, and how does it help your clients or coaches you mentor reach their full potential?
So one of the things we do is look for simplicity out of complexity. And that pamphlet itself might sound a bit strange, but most people try to follow rule book. They try to follow structures and processes, and they follow the way things have always been done, or the way that other people say they must be done. most people are looking to gurus and following what other people are doing. Instead of analyzing a situation, using imagination and saying, what is going to be the most efficient way of doing this? How can you take multiple paths of need and create one simplistic solution that fulfills everything? And it's a particular skill set to bring those together. And I just seem to have developed it over the years, and it's what I enjoy doing. So what the work that I do is very much about that. So for taking a past example, in my past, I was a chief exec of an arts charity. Amongst many things I did there was I rewrote job descriptions. In England, there's this generalistically saying, there's an attitude of, always has been, it's not in my job description. Why should I be doing it? And that's either to the fore or the back of people's minds. So I thought, well, I need to change that. I need to come up with something new. So I came up with a whole different way of doing it. I scrapped job descriptions altogether. And I came up with a whole different structure, a whole different way of describing people's roles and responsibilities. And I actually called it key roles and responsibilities. And I set up a structure for staff and for managing the organization that underpinned it. It was a very simple model with a great deal of complexity behind it. That was great fun for me, creating that. It's something that I only used there, and I've used now in Hondo, which is one of the many models that we've implemented. And that's what we do. We take situations where nobody else has probably got the answer, and we provide solutions. Another simple example would be, whilst I was there working for the charity, I was working not only in-house at the way that charity was run, but I was also working at strategic level in the art sector and regional and national level, and very much involved in those meetings. So I was observing the way that the voluntary sector was operating and listening to a lot of the problems. And out of that, I formulated my own approach as to how the voluntary sector could be changed and structured and run very efficiently. I never got to implement it because, to be honest, the voluntary sector there at that time was very staid in its ways and very used to doing things in the traditional way and not so open to change. So I've held on to the all the things that I developed, and whilst I used some of them in the organization when I was there, and I continue to develop that model. And that's one of the many things that fits within Finch model. We have simple solutions. We create simple solutions. We listen to people. I've been trained by a number of coaches, but the best one for me is a coach called Rich Litvin. He's an exponential coach. He's one of the world's top coaches. It's not so widely known, but he coaches presidential candidates, NASA scientists, special forces operatives, people at the very top of their game. And he talks about using insights rather than just providing information or support and providing solutions. He talks about insights. He talks about changing the way that people see the world, opening up new possibilities. And that's what I love doing, just helping people, not to tell them how I would do it. I give suggestions, but I coach. So in my background, for example, I started coaching in the early 1990s. By the mid-1990s, I was one of the very first people ever to qualify as an assessor of other coaches against the new national coaching standards. My principles in coaching are very traditionally founded on the basics and on how it should be done. So I look to develop people. I look to develop people and enhance them and to help them become the best they can be, the best version of themselves. So it's all about listening. Rich Litvin, despite all his incredible expertise and incredible reputation, talks about the best insight he ever had, He asked his mother-in-law, what was the one piece of advice you would give him in life? And she stopped and she thought, and he's talked about this very often. He said to him, very simply, listen has the same letters as silence. Listen has the same letters as silence. Very profound.
You really brought up so many relevant points. And the first thing was it was about developing processes. The problem with processes, they can look really great on paper, but if they don't apply to the individuals that are actually doing the work, the individuals aren't going to buy into it, or they're going to try to develop their own processes, maybe outside of management directives, which is going to cause all kinds of morale rifts in the workplace. And you have individuals that are not on the same consistent path. And I think, you talked about listening. It's important that we listen to the people that we are working with, that we're coaching or that we're trying to develop as coaches, because we need to hear from them what their strengths are, what their limitations are, and what they need. And then we can craft a solution that is tailored to their needs. And it all starts, and you're absolutely right, with listening. Whether it's building an effective therapeutic relationship with a client in crisis, whether it's developing a good coach, developing an even better person, it all involves listening in terms of finding out what their needs are and empowering them and working collaboratively to get them to where they need to be. And a lot of times I think that kind of gets lost in the translation. And I'm with you with gurus. I don't have a guru. I don't subscribe to gurus because gurus will tell you, do it my way, and this is the only way that's going to work. And I believe there's a lot of different ways to achieve the same goal. I love your philosophy because it aligns with mine on many levels.
Yes. One of the things I talk to people about when they are asking about coaching and coaches, I always say, there's a tendency to look for money. If you want to make a lot of money, and most people do these days, most people are chasing money, whether you agree with it or not. But what they do is they look for somebody who is already successful at the level where they want to get to. And then they want to follow their system. The big thing they're missing is the person who's at that level has different resources. It is at a different stage of business. The newer, when you're starting out, there's a huge disparity. Mm-hmm. There's a huge disparity. If you find somebody who is at a similar level or above where you're at, but has the knowledge, the skills to listen, has the experience and has the insights and has the capability of coaching you up to the level where you want to be or beyond, that's a different matter. They're not easy to find, but they're out there. And yes, it's all about that perception sells. In fact, I was on an event just the other day where the host was talking about meeting many people in her career who outwardly appeared to be hugely successful. Yeah, they were owning the stage. They were giving out, you know, their reputation. They were talking about coaching packages of $30,000 plus. And you would think that they were just they were absolutely killing it, as they say, you know, really, really successful. And as she says, every single one of them, when she talked to them and interviewed them and spoke to them in depth, they were absolutely stony broke. They went, got no clients. Oh, it was all a front. It was all about what they wanted to do, but none of them were doing it. People are trying to put on a false front, and social media, for all its good, its fault, are that people are putting on a false front and they're not being true to who they are and being honest about where they're at. There's too much of that going on now. So to find people that you can connect with, you have to connect with your own values and attract people who share those values. Attract the people who connect with you. And that's when quality of life changes and the relationships change. And when real change can happen is when you connect with people who are even more aligned with you because if you have the right attitude and the right approach that you don't know everything and you're there to work together and enhance each other, it's rather like a relationship, personal relationship. You move forward together, you support each other.
To me, it's really about building relationships, you know, and that's how you do that. If we can align with values, we're going to build those relationships, and abundance is going to follow. If you're right, if you worry about the bottom line first, that's and you exclude, well, who do I want in my support system? What type of people do I want to attract for my business? Yeah. Then, you know, I think you're going to fail.
It's one of my pet peeves is that the whole industry is so focused on ideal customer avatar. Yeah. Who is your customer? A lot of people talk about, well, your ideal customer is looking in the mirror and seeing yourself and thinking about yourself at a younger age. A lot of people talk about that. Other people talk about finding somebody who's, you know, the gender, the age, the demographics, all of these things. It's rubbish, to be honest. What you've got to find is you've got to dig deep into yourself, understand yourself, understand where you want to be in life. What's your legacy? What inspires you? What fires you up? What do you believe in? What lines won't you cross? The more you dig into that, the more you understand yourself. But when you truly understand yourself, you truly understand who you would like to be working with. And then you start attracting them, because you're sharing who you are. It's the one thing that makes everybody's business unique. It's you. So share what makes you who you are, what excites you. I have this saying that the world of work is the world of hurt, but it shouldn't be. Most people are focused on going to work, doing a job to make money, as much money as they can to fund their lifestyle. Does that bring you happiness? No. I would say 9 times out of 10 people are unhappy in their work because they're just doing it in order to earn money. They're not doing something that makes them happy or excites them and put something back into the world. Not everybody wants to do that. Most people do. Put something back into the world. People are afraid to step out of the comfort zone at the rat race. To really find what it is that fires them up and inspires them. I'm lucky that I found it. In some ways, I've created it, but I also attracted it. As you rightly said earlier, you attract people at the right moment, and it's meant to be. And we're building that.
Well, and I agree that once you have a sense of who you are, you know who you want to attract. If you don't have a sense of who you are, then who you attract is going to be, it's going to be a crapshoot. And then you're trying to determine who you are on the fly and maybe utilizing other individuals who you attract without having any sense of identity for yourself. You're going to use those individuals as kind of a mirror. And that mirror may not be an accurate reflection of who you are. You're determining who you are based on an external locus of control, based on qualities you see from others who you have attracted without knowing who you are first. And yeah. Everything, whether you're going to be a great coach, a great mentor, a great therapist, always starts with self-reflection and self-analysis. And that is always ongoing. It's like, who are you? Who do you want to be? Who do you want to attract? What is the goal for your business? What is the goal for your therapy practice? What is it that you want to achieve? How do you want to help others? I mean, the list can go on and on, Ed, but it's those are the questions that we have to take a really deep dive into and understand that as our experiences changes, as life happens, the answers to those questions are going to be quite different.
Yeah. There's a lovely phrase that some coaches use to define a really good coach. A really good coach doesn't ask difficult questions. A really good coach helps the client to ask more challenging questions of themselves. And I love that, because that is, it's leading and it's helping the person to develop themselves, and that's what it should be. Not copying, just looking deeper into yourself and knowing and using insight, using a lot of insight to pick. I often use the analogy of a doctor, and I say how people behave is a symptom. And you can go to a pharmacy and you can get a cure for your symptom. But if you really want to address the underlying cause, you go to a doctor to find where the underlying cause is. Being good at helping people is to observe the symptom, but use your insight to find the underlying cause, find what's underneath all that and help. Then, rather than just prescribing things, the difference is you then find ways to help that person to help themselves. And that's another challenge. The easy path to take is to be critical. Challenging path is to have solution. Most challenging of all is to be able to implement those solutions, whether you're doing it or helping somebody else to do it for themselves. That's where the real challenge is.
And you really touch on an important point. I think that a good coach or a good therapist will empower an individual to take responsibility for their success and also for their setbacks.
Yeah.
And where they become accountable, they can become genuine, because the more empowered they become, the more responsible they become. All we need to do basically is provide some additional guidance, some additional tools, and just keep them on track when they're off course. And that makes our jobs, it makes our roles much, much more or less stressful. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. A easy example would be my work with US veterans. And most of those, I would say the overwhelming majority, there are 18.5 million veterans in the US alone. The majority of those have mental and physical disabilities, predominantly mental disabilities. And it's easy to see a disability as a disadvantage. Those disabilities are usually wide-ranging. Sadly, the suicide rate of veterans is far higher than civilians. They're just not coping. One of the many things that we do is to, first of all, get them onto a stable financial footing by getting them access to the benefits that they're entitled to, 100% of what they're entitled to. We put them on a financial footing. Then we build back in the camaraderie that they've been missing, that they had during military life. But we help coach them. We help them to gradually achieve their full potential and not see their disability as a disadvantage. It's just a challenge to overcome. They can achieve huge amount despite their setbacks, despite their limitations, whether mental or physical, and find ways to have a better life and to put back into the society. But a model that's seemingly simple, but has wowed everybody we've thought about it a bit. And it's about, so for example, on first contact, we encourage people to go up through the organization and to get more and more involved. So we base that on a military rank system as a reward. And when people want to step up and help others, normally the first question is, what are you going to put back into the organization? And how are you going to fulfill that, the requirements of that rank? Our first question isn't that. Our first question is, what would you like to give back to veterans? And what do you need to take you there? So we start from that. And we make very clear that as much as they give, they're going to receive. It's about their personal development. How do we just use them? There's no using. It's about their personal progression. Everything that we build in is about enhancing themselves. We have some fun with it. I'm going to be working on a video because veterans are very much, they like computer games. And they're very much into films and things like this. And they connect with it. We're going to have a bit of fun with a lot of these things. And when we were chatting about films, One of the ones that came up was Star Trek, the famous the Borg. And when I started looking at it, I thought, your immediate reaction is, oh, crikey, these are enemies. And then I started looking at their qualities, and I realized that the qualities that they have embody a lot of what we're doing. One of the things is they work on people into the collective. They're a collective mind. They're one mind that's connected with everybody. All information is shared equally amongst everybody. When one's hurting or in trouble, all the rest know, and they instantly react. That's in our model. They're enhanced. They're given enhancements, make them more efficient as a unit. We do that. They have a designation. Well, we give designation to people as a reward for how much they put back in. Now, there's all these fun things that you can pick up. This model that we've developed doesn't exist, as far as we know, in any other form. Everybody we've talked to has said, first word is wow. So we talk about how we've done it.
Well, you know, your model is beautiful in its simplicity, and it's sometimes the simplest processes that have the biggest impact. Sometimes if there are too many steps to a process, people are going to get lost. There's more room for confusion. I believe in the simple approach. Don't complicate things. The other thing I like with what you do with the veterans, you ask them what do you have to offer?
Yeah.
That's what you have, as opposed to looking at them through their disability. So you assume a position of strength with them. And I think that's going to get them engaged, because they may have had, you know, previous therapists, maybe previous coaches looking at what they can't do and helping them develop a plan from what they can't do, as opposed to developing a plan from their inherent strengths. Because there's always strengths amidst any type of disability. We always need to find that.
We there are many threads and many sort of things that we talk to people about how we're doing this. One of the things that came up with in the early stages is to say, when people enter the military very young, it's usually about 1% of society is able to enter the armed services, because they have to be clean, no criminal record, no drugs, alcohol abuse, anything like that. But they're all entering the military at a very, very young age, very, very young age. And the first thing the military does is they break them. They mentally and physically break them open, and so they're moldable into becoming efficient soldiers. That's a process, and it's highly effective, and it works. It works extremely well. During their service, they have to follow instructions. And unfortunately, those instructions can be very rigid. There's a percentage of people who, through no fault of their own, fall foul of the rules, and they get dishonorable discharge. When they're dishonorably discharged, falling foul of a rule, which could have been something simple, virtually nobody touches them. They're not able to get support and help. So one of the things we're doing is helping them as well as others. And look, what we wanted to do is to say, okay, the military prepares a veteran for civilian life to a degree, but it's a limited degree. They're put on a plane with a buddy, and that's pretty much it. Got to find their own way. Mentally, they're not prepared for civilian life at all. And it's talking to a lot of veterans, it's taking on average about 10 years without support to find their place in society. And that's way, way, way too long. These are highly trained people, highly skilled. Huge amount of money has gone in. They've given their oath to protect and uphold the US Constitution and the country and to serve the country. One thing most people don't know is that technically a veteran can be called back into active duty at any time in their life. Any time. They've never actually left, so they continue to serve. One of the things we said is, despite whatever your limitations are, you need a new mission. A new mission where you can use your skills and abilities within society for the betterment of society, and have a new role, a new way that you can serve. And what we're doing amongst all this is helping to build that up. And when I talked a little bit earlier about the Borg analogy, as we bring people in to the membership, and particularly as we take them up through the ranks of involvement and leading and training others, we're bringing in a huge array of skills. So as that grows, the amount of knowledge grows. And as soon as a veteran comes in, they're accessing all of that knowledge. Our next stage, which will be launched in the foreseeable future, definitely, is we're then going to have a similar operation for active duty. That's going to have different benefits, but it's going to prepare them for civilian life. And the moment they become a veteran, the very moment they become a veteran, they're immediately into the collective community. They're immediately supported and transitioned, and everything else is available to them. The third stream we're going to have is for the spouses of active duty. They need support. Spouses of family need support. There have been times in history where they've been supported, and particularly in the Roman Empire, they were given a plot of land and a stipend and supported to a degree, but not the camaraderie, which is central to their life with active duty, and not support to give them the skills to be in society and to contribute to the enhancement of society. The other thing that we're aiming to do, we're attracting a lot of attention from what we're doing already.
Well, it's certainly a different model. And I think, as you know, too, a lot of times we are always concerned about a gap in services for those who need it. And I know in the past, I know there's veterans have had concerns about the response of the Veterans Administration to their particular needs. And it's always been an issue ever since I've been in, you know, in the human service field. I started in the 80s, and there's always been more individuals who need treatment or need services than there are resources to provide it. We need to have a better response, not only with veterans, but anybody that needs those resources, which is why I think coaches can be valuable as an adjunct to in working separately, perhaps, and then working in conjunction with mental health therapists, because it can provide that gap in services. It's different, but it can still provide that gap in services in terms of providing a platform for listening, a safe place for individuals to, you know, talk about their issues, and also to connect them with other individuals who are going through the same issues and create that sense of camaraderie, universality, so that they're not feeling alone and isolated.
And this is, we will be announcing probably within the next month, partnership. We've had a conversation with a business that's an individual who wants to join us. He heard about what we do and he wants to join us. He's, without giving too much away at the moment, he's one of the world's leading experts on veterans accessing their entitlement to disability benefits. And he's able to do that on an extremely fast track method. And it's done on their inexorable basis. He's developed systems that enable that to happen. That's lovely. That sets up that step. There's the community that we're building as well, where there's all the collective expertise. And I'm thinking about one of our leaders in particular. We became a member. We've promoted him up to the rank of captain, and he's got responsibilities. He's in the insurance sector, and he's in that sector because he was a chef and had a whole career as a chef until his disabilities caught up with him and he couldn't stand for more than 4 hours. So he had to give up a career as a chef. And I was coaching him recently and talking to him about how he can use his skills and knowledge as a chef. He's not just any ordinary chef. He worked in 2 Michelin-starred restaurants as a sous chef. His knowledge is vast. And having these latent pieces of knowledge in people and skills and abilities that we can share collectively, because food and health are one vital element leading a quality life. Christopher Raymond Castro has just recently written up an 8-point program for how we want to support veterans and health, environmental awareness, spiritual awareness. All of these are in there. And these are all things we need to do, is to help people to realize their potential and to share knowledge and expertise. People are very, one of the problems with the voluntary sector and the nonprofits is a lot of them are quite tight. They won't share data. They won't don't want to work together. It's, now we've got funding and we want to do this, and we'll share, then well, we might lose out. No, if you share resources, you can actually achieve more, because you're there to community, you're there to serve a need. And the more you work together in partnership, in true partnership, the bigger and better it gets. We're partnering with an organization that's going to map out and support all veteran-owned businesses across all the United States. So we're working very much in partnership with them. And because they're like-minded, we've had our values right out there for everybody to see. And that's attracting big names coming to us and saying, can we work with you? Lovely.
Yeah, and people are going to align with values that are synonymous with honor, with integrity, yeah, and that is looking out for the individual's best interest as opposed to the organization's best interest. So you're going to attract that for sure. Yeah. And I think the other thing is, I don't think individually, with our individual goals and our collective goals, we can't achieve those without collaboration, without partnership. And I think organizations that choose to be very close to the vest about their methods that are successful and refuse to share that are going to find themselves on a very, very, very isolated island. And they're not going to survive.
No. I mean, we're seeing this more and more. We're now 2 months into launch of the beta phase. We've got well over 100 members. That's without even actively recruiting. And companies are coming to us in droves at the moment. And we've been quite shocked at the level of offers we've had. We're a non-political organization. We're aware of the political agendas, but we don't align with any political parties and don't get involved in the politics. But we've had at least two contacts approach us who've said, we're on first name terms with military in the Pentagon, we're in first name terms in the White House. We can get you those kinds of introductions as soon as you're ready. any young organization to have offers of that level would be absolutely blown away. But it's been happening because we're just open and we do things differently. These are the kinds of doors that open once you have a different approach.
And you don't subscribe to conventional wisdom. It's a very common sense approach. But as you know, Ed, conventional wisdom can be highly overrated.
Absolutely.
I had a very wise mentor. He was a Navy SEAL commander and a social worker. So you want to talk about that as a combination of, knew how to work with people. He was a great clinician and he knew how to build great teams. During one of our many lunchtime conversations, he said, Dave, sometimes with certain individuals, you go by the book. Other times you take the book and you throw it right out the window because the book doesn't apply. And it was all about, and he was a visionary, and it was all about then in the 80s, individualization, working with the client where they were at, developing a strategy, developing interventions that were unique to their needs. And that's something now that everybody should really align with, and we should really be doing that type of client-centered work not only in the therapy field, which is it's ethically mandated, but in any realm, whether it's coaching or any other type of self-improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're constantly refining the way that we operate. We put a huge amount of work into developing the overall concept and modeling it, and then we're testing it out and seeing what works. One of the things we thought about in the early stages was the military rank system as a reward. And we worked on it and played around with it and came up with something that we felt was solid enough and was worth trying out, and we're confident in it. It's absolutely taken off like you wouldn't believe. It's been a massive success. And so probably almost everything that we've invested in, and because we're doing it for the benefit of the beneficiaries, we're doing it to enhance people. We're doing it not from this, I've got knowledge, so you should look up to me attitude. We're doing it from the, I've got knowledge and I want to share it. Mm. I want to pass it on. I want to collectively enhance people. It's a very different approach that those people are not doing. I'd love to see more organizations doing this because it's extremely efficient. So far, our organization has no employees, we have no paid staff. We can scale to any scale we want to with no paid staff. And everybody is just totally committed to the work. We've got a lot of people who have full-time jobs, but they're still absolutely dedicated to the enhancement of a veteran. They're putting a huge amount in because they believe in what we're doing and everything we stand for.
Well, your mission as an organization is empowering not only to the individuals you serve, but to the individuals who voluntarily align with that.
Yeah.
It's fulfilling on both ends. Exactly. Ed, you've given us so many rich takeaways today just from our conversation. And we're, you know, just wrapping up.
Yeah.
And I could see a part two in our future somewhere down the road, particularly as these new pieces you have come together. It'd be great to have you back for an update to see what has changed with the Finch model and how that's impacted on other areas that you've talked about expanding into. But the last question I'd like to ask you is, for people who want to get in touch with you, find out more about your services, what is the best way for them to do that?
Ask@finchmodel.com is my email address, or they can just do finchmodel@gmx.com. And either way, email, you can find me on social media. Got quite a following on Facebook. Find me either way there. And if they're interested in having, if they know somebody who's a veteran, look at veteranhondoclub.com. And they can find details of my work with veterans on there. Yes, we'll welcome anybody who's been touched by what we've been talking about today and would like to discuss it in any shape or form. We're here to help and support.
And certainly for anybody who is interested in looking at services and finding out more about how the Finch model can help them, it's worth a conversation. And I think you will be pleasantly surprised in terms of the services that they offer, how they do it, and how you become empowered in the process. So, Ed, with that, thank you so much for being a part of the Teaching Journeys podcast today. It was a great conversation. I hope we can do this again in the future.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's been my pleasure. Pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.